to Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Good day, listener, and welcome to the Big Red Couch. Today, on the couch, from an undisclosed location, we have Craig.
Hello!
And Ben, from his regular desk. We'll be talking a little bit more about Craig's wonderful journey later on the show, if you're interested in such things. But be assured, it will be colouring his remarkable story and tale that's coming up.
I feel like you're overselling this already.
I am. Yeah, I'm setting you up for this hideous, gibbering collapse.
It had to happen.
Our prompt for today comes from Jim of the Crucible of Realms podcast. It's one of the ones that's been floating around in the mystery box for some time, so we'll have to get back and let Jim know his fine work has not gone to waste. And that prompt is Time Sculptors.
I feel like I should have had some sort of pithy comment to make, but frankly, I've got nothing. I was mostly thinking of sort of weird analogies of stuff floating to the top of the mystery box, like, I don't know, bay leaves in a stew or something.
It's kind of a stew.
Yeah.
Sort of.
A stew of discarded business cards from a discarded yeah. employee. So, yeah, that worked out well.
Excellent. You did get something out of there.
Oh, absolutely. Business cards.
PTSD.
It's probably some stationary items. I mean,
repetitive strain injury.
Yeah, one or two health issues. Trip to Christchurch once.
Hmm.
That was nice. He says weekly. Realistically, you know, sort of money, CV, fodder, and probably some stationery, just statistically.
Yeah. If you're going to throw a former employer under a bus, throw them all the way under the bus, because, you know, it's not the classiest thing in the world, but you should commit to it if you're going to.
The trouble is, I kind of liked the team I was working with. It makes the whole thing very confusing. It's kind of a, well, I want to throw them under the bus, except for these specific people.
Right.
It complicates the whole issue. It really does.
Corporate monoliths being what they are.
Yeah.
So, on to much more cheerful topics. Have you got an idea this week for Time Sculptors?
I do.
Woohoo. Word on us.
Okay. I see what you did there, how I suddenly ended up going first. Don't think I don't notice these things. Okay. I guess my question is, should I do the whole, well, here's how I got to this, or should I lay out the idea and then just jump back to, and here's how I got there.
I figure you should do that as a retrospective, so it's more of a surprise.
Okay, so lay out the idea. All right, here's the idea for Time Sculptors. The players are, they are people in a place. Not exactly a revolutionary idea so far, I grant you.
We're verging on the fundamental, almost.
Yes, it's a very fundamental concept of role-playing. Okay, they are people, they live in a world, that whole world makes sense. The whole thing makes sense to them. And then they discover, as part of the story, that the place they're in is created. And it's not created from the point of view that there are people pretending to be something that they're not, that there are buildings that have been artfully constructed to look the part. This has been created at the level that someone, or more realistically a team of someones, have crafted this alternate timeline to be what they're living in.
So it's a constructed reality, possibly a utopia in someone's ideas, or at least a functioning reality, rather than being a simulacrum of something else.
Correct. Yeah, it's not built as a simulacrum. Everything there is real in the sense that, apart from the caveat that's about to come up, nobody's pretending to be anything other than who they are. Nothing is faked. Everything got there because the people in that reality built it that way, or just are that way. But it was designed and very lovingly created for the purposes of tourism.
Okay.
The way I see this one going, I can see it being a long-term game, but I think the easiest version of it would be the one-story type game, where you've got people, they are in a world that to them is utterly mundane. It may be actually quite fantastical to us, but to them, it's just the way the world works. And then they discover that that's not the way the world works in other places. I'm thinking either they find one of the tourist devices that allows them to step between realities, or if I was going to go with a slightly more dynamic approach and a slightly less magical mystery tour approach, because it would be very, very easy to turn this into, here's weird alternate reality of the week. Mm-hmm. Fun for a while, but you don't really get to do anything.
So sliders with a concession store.
Yeah, sliders with souvenir shops and without the time pressure. And without the Nazi Neanderthals. Or were they lizard men?
Right.
They were Nazi something or others, that much I remember. I got a bit confused by sliders towards the end. I like the idea of doing things as, you could do worse than having the town sheriff and some of the town sheriff's mates, and a tourist, and we're talking a tourist from another reality, gets killed. Probably by non-accidental means, and maybe in a way that enables them to provide just a couple of clues before they die that something's not right. And so you've got a bunch of people who have no idea that their world was very lovingly created, with their hands on presumably a very simple to operate with friendly diagrams device that will enable them to step back and forth between realities, and the notion that somebody out there murdered a tourist for no reason that they can currently understand.
Hmm.
That's kind of the kicker I'd use to get them into the scenario.
Yeah. So this is almost like Westworld, except the players are not androids or something. This is like a, you know, as I say, lovingly constructed, but ultimately fictional reality, sculpted, as it were, by people who are in charge.
Yep.
And the party rumbles to this fact in that something they're not supposed to be aware of. This is like Mogworld from Ben Croshaw, the idea that an NPC in an MMO game environment becomes conscious that they're an NPC in an MMO game.
Ooh!
So, yeah, so the world around them is meticulously constructed and set up for a certain purpose. It isn't just for the existing. There is actually an element they're supposed to be entertaining people, providing something.
Yeah, so I figure it'd be a case of, I mean, now is probably the point where I start backtracking a little bit, but what first came to mind was the idea of ornithopters flying their way down the Waikato River Valley.
Okay.
And it just kind of spun off from there. So I like the idea that you've got a place that is, you know, maybe if all of your players are from roughly the same area, or at least know the place, you pick a place you all know, you create the steampunk, the high-end steampunk version of the thing. So you've got steam-powered ornithopters and steam-powered autogyros and the like, and this is the world that some team of time sculptors created so that tourists can come and look at this wonderful place. And you know, presumably they're equipped with clothes of the period and they're told how to blend in. And if you went looking, you'd probably, once you knew they were there, you can probably figure out who they are. But if you had no reason to look, you wouldn't spot them.
That or the travellers or some sort of classification of people who come and go are just part of the environment. This is a normal thing that happens. So
yeah.
you just miss their funny antics as, you know, just they might literally be tourists, but you think they're from the big city up the way rather than from being from another reality.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, the more I thought about it, the more I rather liked the idea of, rather than simply handing the, hey, you can jump between realities device to the players and wandering off, instead giving them something very specific to do, which is a murder mystery. Because those are always fun. And you can maybe kind of, sort of allows you, if you don't pin down the details too much, it allows you to tweak it depending on how the players seem to want to go. You know, if they're interested in knuckling down and solving the problem and righting the wrongs, well, that's great. If they seem to want to wander around through multiple realities, well, then maybe that's what the killer's doing. Kind of take your lead from that.
Mm, it's a straight-up mystery, right?
Oh, yeah.
The mystery comes with layers of, like, who is the dead person? Where are they from? Why are they killed? Why are these things an out-of-context problem for us?
As you said that, the whole mystery thing is something I hadn't thought of. I am just imagining the police of our sculpted time basically visiting the original time, so breaking completely out of their timeline and out of their historical period, in order to do an investigation on the basis of hot pursuit and come on, we're both cops here. That would be hilarious to me.
You mean joining forces? Because that would be weird.
Yes, I was imagining a cop in Los Angeles kind of being confronted by Goofy and Pluto, both wearing police uniforms, doing the, look, we're both cops here.
Yes.
We really want to know who murdered that mouse. So that's what I came up with.
And interestingly enough, though I'm getting kind of a weird river world. There's like a constellation of sort of things. Something like Westworld meets Riverworld meets the Tripods kind of something. So a little bit technologically thrown back and kind of an isolated kind of thing. But you could really run it in any sort of fantasy setting. And you just suddenly have, oh, the traveling merchants that always act so unusually, well, they're not from here.
Mm. They're really, really not from here. Yeah. Equally, I can see... I will name drop a few kind of media properties. There's the movie The 13th Floor,
mm-hmm.
which dealt with some issues of this, and which I'm pretty confident I've nicked bits of the plotline from the more I think of it. There was the idea of tourists essentially treating people as a nature reserve in the book Future Track 5.
It also turns up a little bit in Transmetropolitan.
Yes.
With a reservation. Yeah.
And one of the reservations there was a future reservation.
Mm, the arcology.
Yeah. They knew they were a reservation.
Mm. All of the ethical and like planning restraints and so forth have been taken off, so that they were effectively hothousing transhuman evolution and so forth.
Pretty much, because I think there is that line of, what's the death rate like? Pretty high, but we try to keep it as low as we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, like I said, you could do a hell of a one... It wouldn't be a one-shot, but it would be a one-story arc. But equally, I think if the players got right into it, it would be easy enough... It'd be easy enough to start doing not quite a Sliders, but a visiting other created times.
Hmm. Depending on how you progress the thing as well, I imagine that you could... Initially, in the discovery and resolution of the fact that you are this pocket reality, venture back to the real reality, whatever super reality that's been created in, briefly to complete something. But then, like, the next season is functioning with the awareness that the group has that they are part of this pocket reality, because it's going to bound to be unsettling, it's bound to be strange things. And by the end of that, have that become more public knowledge. And like season 3 is society in total trying to cope with the concept of that they're fictional and build on it that way.
Ooh.
I think season 4 is going to be carnage and possibly total, like, local Armageddon. But
I think at that point you just shift sideways and use 316 Carnage Among the Stars as the base system and go from there.
But the idea of unpacking that from being... There's been a murder. This is almost like the holodeck characters finding a body and going, wait a second, they're not a program. Holy crap, we're programs.
Yeah.
And it does ask some, you know, fairly relevant questions about existence and crazy stuff like that.
My very favorite Star Trek episode is a Star Trek 9 episode with a bunch of folks in a small, fairly isolated village who call for help when there are disappearances. People are going missing and they have no idea why. And when enough investigation occurs, it turns out that nobody in that village is a real person. Everybody's body is a holographic projection.
Okay.
And none of them knew.
Hmm.
Which then leads to the question of, okay, do we tell them? Followed by, okay, we've told them, we're going to have to switch off the projector to fix it. And we're not 100% that it's going to turn on again.
I think it's a pretty one of those do nothing and doom some people versus the do something and risk everybody, risk saving or losing everybody kind of ethical conundrums, which they like to do.
And a, what is the nature of being alive?
And you also lost at least 10 geek points for referring to that as Star Trek 9.
Really? I thought I did.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Such is life. Everybody knew what I meant.
Yes.
Yes.
The foaming and twitching has already started.
I see. I'd hoped that I had said Star Trek Deep Space Nine, but...
If possible that the slightly shonky hotel wireless cut it out for me.
That's what I'm hoping.
If so, I will go back and edit it out of the audio, so I'm... substantially seem to be correct.
That seems entirely fair. Actually, if it helps, yes, my favourite episode of Star Trek 9, just so that you've got a clean take.
And people are going to be going, does it mean Deep Space Nine? Were there 9 movies?
How many movies were there? I stopped looking or caring.
Yes. I'm sure we can craft an audio equivalent of those posters with the quote attributed to the wrong character in the wrong series.
Oh my god! R2-D2, I loved him on Star Trek.
Yes.
With a picture of a Dalek.
Pretty much.
Okay, well that's what I had.
I like that. It's an interesting... What you're going to look out for is making sure that the players have some investment in the world.
Mm.
You've got to understand how you're interacting with the scope of this universe. Is it like literally just a valley, like a secret valley that everyone thinks they're in, like olden timey Western era kind of technology, and if you go over the mountain it's like 21st century, or is it literally another reality, or is it literally in a virtual setting? You want to work through that, because each of those trappings, while it's at the core it's the same, and at least as far as the story is concerned, you want to know how it's going to come out.
I think it's literally another reality. It's not a case of, you climb over the mountains and there is a different reality. I think it's this entire world, that basically the people who sculpted it went back far enough and tweaked things in the right way to end up with steampunk world. And that applies for the whole damn planet. So it's possible that there are other little bouts of tourist activity going on in this world.
Interesting. And they could have set up the environment, or like multiple universe theory being what it is. They might just have like paged through the catalogue until they found, here it is. It's completely uninhabited except for small pockets of people here or there who are on the verge of discovering this sort of technology. Awesome. We'll use that one.
Pretty much, yeah. So from one point of view, they are complete dicks.
Oh, goodness, yes.
On the other hand, they're probably not... They probably haven't set up anything like, for example, Westworld.
I don't know what specific was leading me towards Westworld, but that's just an internal switch.
Oh, I mean, Westworld was all about cowboys and shootouts, and part of the shtick was what happens when the machines that are programmed to not kill you... Kind of forget that bit.
Here's a warning. If you have to program a machine not to kill you...
Yeah, good sign. Good sign that something's gone wrong.
This is an implicit problem that you should probably be addressing.
Yeah. I figure they wouldn't create anything that is too dangerous to be in, simply because that entire world is real. If a tourist gets into an argument with the wrong person, and you've created a environment, you've created post-apocalyptic Badlands environment, you're going to kill a lot of tourists.
It depends on where they're coming from. Maybe that's an acceptable risk. Maybe they're very jaded people. Maybe that's, this is part of the excitement that they're looking for.
Yeesh.
Yeah, that could be the thing. I mean, but you're right, and where it's a physical alternate reality where you are transposed to, It has the exactly the same implicit personal risks as going to another country.
Mm.
You are not suddenly immortal because your surroundings are different.
Indeed. And so, I'm working on a theory here, but probably people want that other country to be the United Kingdom or the United States, large chunks of South America, less so any of a wide number of war zones.
But, you know, there is such a thing as adventure tourism. There is such a thing as, is it ghoulish tourism, snuff tourism almost?
Disaster tourism? Yeah. I'm just imagining the circumstance of sending a bunch of tourists to, yeah, to post-apocalyptic land, and what they're going to be is, it'd be like throwing a snow cone into a blast furnace.
yeah, it depends. You've got a pretty solid idea there, but I'm already spinning stuff off because I'm quite interested in the online concept.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So if it's slightly primitive, slightly quaint, charming, and kind of technologically backwards world. And, you know, this could have started off as anthropology, for all we know, and just sort of become. Maybe if they'd started looking at these alternate realities and going, aha, here is a society that's progressed on different lines from ours. Oh, it won't hurt if we just send a few people over there, since we understand their customs, basically. Gosh, we're running out of ground.
Yes. Yeah, what do you mean? You told one of them about steam engines. You know, let's adjust the focus a little bit. What happens in 100 years? Oh, fuckity balls. Yeah.
Cool. There's a lot of scope for it. I like the idea. And gives you an opportunity to play. You could refresh or reboot a fantasy setting. It's a bit stale otherwise by saying, well, it's kind of an adjunct to another world. It could be quite interesting.
I am imagining the setting in Log Horizon now.
Because
that's clearly post... It's post something.
Well, the original game makers clearly decided that, hey, we've got this map already, let's make locations familiar. The scale's a little bit different, but, you know, it's everything is laid out normally so people can identify it as a map of Japan, supposedly the entire world. Mm. Interestingly enough, you know, because they do have players who apparently have logged in from other places, but wound up, previously logged in other places, but wound up after the event that catapulted the players into the world that is like the game, but clearly isn't the game, back into the locations that they actually were dialing in from, which is a bit weird. That raises certain questions.
I am looking forward to the next season of that if it happens, or
the
translations of the light novels, because I think it would take me many, many years to learn enough Japanese to be able to read them.
Well, those sort of things are growing in popularity. Actually, your idea of a closed-off society echoed a bit with another anime I'm watching at the moment, which is a very odd one called From the New World.
Mm-hmm.
It pretty much opens with modern day Japan, a couple of, you know, and some creepy looking teenagers sort of scattered around different locations. Basically, a section of society has come into massively powerful psychokinetic abilities with terrible psychological feedback.
Huh.
And there's a bunch of heads exploding, and it jumps to being 1,000 years in the future, where through social, genetic, cultural sort of engineering, a vastly reduced set of humanity is surviving pretty well, but with this very, very tight control over how they develop their powers, and indeed who gets to develop the powers that has been gifted to humanity.
Ah.
Because they keep having flashbacks to insane emperors and events and people who have not been using these things wisely, and also folks who are consumed. There's lots of little fables about people who are being changed by the uncontrolled use of these powers, and people who are unable to stop themselves from subconsciously affecting the world around them with these abilities.
When you mentioned insane emperors, all I could think of was, don't you remember I was here for Operation Impending Doom, that was it.
Yes. Operation Impending Doom 1.
Yes. All right. Do you have an idea for this one?
Yes. Mine was a bit more Stephen King inspired.
Creepy.
Yep. I was thinking about the idea of, you know, sculpting time. It's like, you had a really good angle on it, because I was trying to think, oh, here we can change history and we can do all these cool things, and that's not a game. Okay? You know, I think we've had conversations about games where you change certain things in history.
Mm.
But from the description of sculpture, maybe thinks it's from an aesthetic sense, which means it kind of isn't, there's no goal other than history itself being aesthetically pleasing. And that sounds like really cold, screwed up kind of environment where you could be going, right, so, you know, we haven't had a good pogrom in a while. I mean, it's, you know, it's about pogrom o'clock for our timeline. So let's set that up. Because it could be tranquil and peaceful, but that would be dull. And I am, and for visual representation, I was clicked back to the New Zealand-born kinetic sculptor, a guy called Len Lai, who does crazy, was doing crazy things with stainless steel for much of the last century, and scratching things into film negatives and all sorts of weird stuff like that.
And the wind wands?
Yeah, yeah. So when people say sculpture, you don't normally think of 30-foot-long lengths of spinning stainless steel, flexing metal and so forth. So that's the kind of imagery I was getting, but no, it's like I couldn't see how there would be, unless it was a really kind of remote, almost board gamey style, aha, I like my history to be full of conflict and so forth and doing certain things. It seemed a bit remote.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they might make good villains in that circumstance. I don't know. Maybe you have a timeline you like, but there's these assholes running around from the far future going, well, it doesn't really affect us because, you know, this, that past is so far back that, you know, the ripples have diminished greatly by the time we get to us. And we like playing with this sort of stuff. That'd be pretty terrifying.
Mm.
So what I came up with instead was basically a heist game, but it's played out in the last fractions of a second before the valuable object or the piece of art or something is destroyed forever. Much like in the Sim King story of the Langoliers, time isn't quite this consecutive progression of events and entropy and so forth that happen all at the same time. There is a time that hasn't been occupied by living things yet, which exists before the event. The current time occupies this place where time actually happens, and then the previous slice of time is now passed on. And the idea that you are just sort of jumping in that moment before the bomb goes off or the volcano erupts, taking the treasures of antiquity and shuffling them into duffel bags and then bouncing back to your own time to be part of a collection of lost artifacts.
Okay, so you are you are nicking the car from the Titanic, the cargo hold from the Titanic, and you're looting the purser's safe on the Hindenburg. This mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Yeah, stuff that's gone missing for good, but the idea is that you are slipping in before the event claims the thing finally, and taking it back to presumably some very wealthy collector in the future who has access to time technology. And the idea would be to set up a heist so that you've actually got, you've got a concrete timeline of things that happen. The part of the idea would be you can't undo the event. Maybe it's a volcano erupting. That's not practical. Maybe you could warn somebody, but they might not be able to do anything about it. But the idea is that this event took place. The object or the thing was lost to history.
When you say you can't undo the event, do you mean it is impossible or really bad things will happen if you do?
Well, if you say stopped the Hindenburg from crashing and the thing from the safe of the Hindenburg may only have been significant because it was supposedly lost in the crash in Hindenburg.
Mm.
But if you prevented the crash, it's now been stolen. It's not the same. It qualitatively isn't the same item. It's now gone missing. I suppose that is effectively the same, but the idea is you're supposed to cause this time travel thing, and I've seen some really dodgy implications of it, but you're supposed to cause as less disruption to the timeline as possible.
Well, there was the book Millennium, which had people from the future nicking people from plane crashes where there were no survivors.
Mm.
And replacing them with effectively meat suits so that nobody would notice.
That's Michael Crichton?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Because effectively the future was so sufficiently screwed up that what they basically needed was people with non-horrifying cancerous genomes.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's much the same thing. They're rampaging around aircraft that they know are going to crash in 3 hours. They've already tranked out everybody, and they're just processing them through to replace them with the appropriate meat suit to prop back in the chair at the right time. Kind of reminds me of that, but with rather more larceny.
Yeah, I would be tempted to throw in a twist that, you know, then maybe they've inspection time and given like a deadline. It's like, oh, okay, this building collapses this time, or this bomb goes off this day. And they get the hint that no one locally actually planted the device, or they discover, say they're raiding a museum and so forth, and they discover a piece of history that they altered themselves. They realize, wait a minute, maybe we're not the good guys.
Yeah, okay, yes, you start to realize that you're not the neutral party, or the neutralish to goodish party, saving the relics of the past for rich gets that you, yeah.
It could be interesting. If you wanted to heighten the intrigue.
Yes, I can think of all sorts of all sorts of horrible things.
And horrible things is what we do.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay, I'm going to stop there because my brain is going in all sorts of ghastly directions. Plus, the Titanic movie was on TV last night and I saw bits of it, so that's where my brain is going. That's kind of cool. So you've got a combination of... I'm thinking you could almost use something like leverage for this.
And I very deliberately said heist.
Yeah, because the heist's the important bit. The fact that it's occurring through time is...
It's flavour. It'd become more relevant when they realise that they've been set back to do something before they did something.
And even then, that still, I suspect, turns into a circumstance where there's still a heist happening. It just starts to be more towards your employers than your target.
Initially, I mean, when it starts to get crazy, maybe they're directed to do something to replace an item or swap out an item before they themselves stole it. So the initial heist is this complicated thing where they know the layout of the building approximately because of archaeological records. They know what sort of people would be around, and they've watched the place for a bit in advance. So they've got this thing down to the minute, and then they have to go to the start of that process again and figure out where they were the entire time.
So that they can replace this item for some reason. Yeah. That's interesting. That would be an interesting wrinkle on the heist genre.
I'm sure the ideas are played for. I'm confident we've spoken about Millennium before
on the show.
Probably stuck in the back of my brain when I was thinking of that.
Now, Millennium was less of a heist situation because they were taking situations where there wasn't much sneakiness involved. It was just we know this plane crashes. We know every transmission that went on and off the aircraft. We have the recordings. We can set up a tape recorder with the right timings to do that. All we really need to do is just gas everybody down and not lose anything timeline inappropriate on the aircraft.
Yeah, and the whole tampering the timeline and dropping anachronisms around is good standard sort of trappings and tropes from that sort of story. So you can definitely put those in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the heist one sounds fun. I would like to play that.
It sounds like a bit of definitely both of these the scenarios we've pitched have these mystery elements to them, which are traditionally better established by the storyteller, the GM, ahead of time. Less likely to work in a sort of a dynamic situation, unless people are really doing well. It's not impossible. I just don't know if systems exist that are quite fierce enough to keep up with people on that.
I think they could be made to. I mean, there's the go-to of Fate, which is quite good for slightly woolly situations, if you've got players who are comfortable with laying down a couple of fate points.
This is as much, determining the fabric of the world that you're working with in play, rather than just the moment-to-moment setting kind of things, which is cool, but this is more of an overarching thing.
I did find when I was thinking about it that I couldn't think of a way of having the players be sculptors of time and making it in any way interesting.
Maybe the audience will come up with a brilliant idea for this.
I'm hoping they do.
It's kind of a... Yeah, as I said, it was a bit too remote and sociopathic. This was the feeling I had. The idea that, yay, we changed the course of history.
Yeah, there was a Isaac Asimov novel, I think it was an Isaac Asimov one, I'll look it up and put it in the show notes, that had to do with the manipulation of time and with the agency that quite literally exists across hundreds of thousands of years, which is dealing with this and is making these adjustments in time. And it did cover things like, you know, they've got technology from all over the show. They have cures for cancer. But what they can't really tell anybody is why some people get it and some people don't. And that's because they know what the knock-on effect of curing this person's disease versus that person's disease will be. And just kind of scattered through the book, you've got these various things and technologies that just kind of got abandoned because, or rewritten because of changes that they made elsewhere.
Hmm. And then there's the ethical conundrum of, if you change a timeline, have you just genocided that previous timeline? Is that something that happens? Even if you are saving them? That came up with the discussion about the season 5 finale of My Little Pony, which is a bit dark, but there you go.
Wow, I am so far behind on My Little Pony.
Yeah, it's okay. There was a friendship lesson and it all got better.
Well, that's the important thing. As long as friendship was the winner on the day.
Multiple genocides. Friendship lesson.
Yay! Genocide is magic. Wait. Getting off topic.
Yes.
Okay, so I think we've kicked those ones around.
Indeed. So, do you want to draw the line from your inspiration for your recent unhinged gallivanting around the North Island?
As in how my idea came about from it?
Mm-hmm.
When I first started thinking about the idea, I thought I was going to end up in a New Zealand town called Hamilton. It's reasonable sized. I think it may be a city. If it's not, it's a bloody huge town.
Also known as Hamiltron, City of the Future.
I have never heard anybody call it that with anything other than mocking in their voice, but yes. I've also heard it referred to as the dead centre of the Waikato.
Gateway to Raglan.
And 2 hours from anywhere interesting. Yeah, okay, so I think we've rattled through most of these.
We could, honestly.
The thing I find most interesting about the town is, in fact, that, you know, it is very flat. There is a river that runs through it, and because that river's been there for quite a long time, it's substantially lower than the town.
Hmm. I can attest to the truth of that. There are many bridges, and they go straight across, and there is a dirty great big trench.
Pretty much, and there's actually some really lovely parkland along there, either side of the river. And so when I was first thinking of time sculptors and the idea of people creating alternate timelines, the idea of some sort of winged machine flying its way along that river valley and kind of banking around the corners and flying under the bridges, that's what kind of stuck in my head. And then it turned out that I was not going to be in Hamilton during that time. I am in a different town, which has a lot of tourists. It is crawling with
them.
And it's crawling in the sense of they're everywhere, and it's crawling in the sense of they walk really slowly. And many of them drive really slowly. And I was just kind of looking and noticing, okay, there is actually an effect. You can kind of tell the difference between the locals and the tourists, and that the locals move at a normal human pace and don't just stop in the middle of things to look around, whereas the tourists are treating this like a bit of a theme park.
Hmm.
And that's kind of where the idea came from. Here's an alternate timeline. I liked the idea, but I wasn't sure what to do with it. And then when I sort of saw the tourists around, I thought, okay, that's what it's about. It's people, you know, the tourists viewing this as this wonderful, strange experience. But to the locals, it's their everyday life. And you're in the way.
This is probably a global phenomenon.
Oh, God, yes.
I suspect. So, and where is the mystery location for people who have been playing at home?
Stuck it out this far? Mm-hmm. This time I am in Taupo, in the centre of the North Island of New Zealand. It's a little town.
Little town. Big lake.
Very big lake. Very, very big lake. Yes, I took some notes, you see. Should I launch into that bit?
Oh, go for it.
Lake Taupo, they're reasonably confident, came into being around 26,500 years ago, during what is known as the Oronui eruption, when a supervolcano exploded, and the lake is the caldera. It's gone off a few times. The last time was probably around 1,700 years ago. It was a fairly big eruption. Well, there are records of the sky having turned red in China and Rome that they're pretty confident was that eruption. So it was literally noticed on the other side of the world. That eruption, that most recent one, probably redecorated the entire North Island of New Zealand. However, as far as we know, there were no people here at that stage. They really didn't arrive until about the 1200s.
To be fair, if there had been people here, who knows if we'd found any evidence that there were afterwards.
Oh, good Lord, no. They would have been buried under a huge amount of vaporized rock. Yeah, this is one of those eruptions where they measure the ejector in cubic kilometers.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was a bad scene.
It would have been a bad scene. It sort of, there was a thread that cropped up on Reddit a little while ago, which was asking about if you were made immortal but sent 3,000 years in the past, what would you do? And my thought was, get the hell out of New Zealand before the next Taupo eruption. I mean, the flip side of that is, learn to build a boat.
Yep.
Because, yes, 3,000 years in the past, it's going to be 2,000 years before you've got anybody to talk to. And you're probably going to get buried in ash. So, yes, the lake is considered to be dormant, not extinct.
How reassuring. We have our fill of irritable geography around here, so.
Well, yes, I mean, just to the south of it, there is Mount Ruapehu, which does erupt from time to time. Mostly bloody great steam explosions, but you do, if you come to New Zealand, have the opportunity to snowboard on a vaguely active volcano, if that's your thing.
And when last time I was in the area, we were at Lake, whose name I've forgotten, which is now the area formerly occupied by the Pink and White Terraces.
Ooh, I have forgotten it as well, but yes. Basically, minerals, deposition of mineral salts, I believe, or deposition of minerals with different colours forming these basically terraced pools. And then volcanic activity happened.
Yes, apparently it was it the lake in the vicinity got 6 times bigger. Surrounding villages and so forth were buried in ash. And in Auckland, they thought the Russians were invading, which was...
So it was a bit loud.
It's like 1880s or something. The eruption was heard. It was one of those short, punctuated ones, but it was heard, you know, the entire length of the island. And didn't. But apparently they're very excitedly looking at the bottom of the lake, because most geography is very inconveniently covered in biological stuff, which, you know, gets in the way, but geologists can look at the bottom of the lakes quite happily and figure out what's going on.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean, when, I think it was back in 94 or 95 that Ruapehu had a period of erupting, and what that mostly meant for the ski field is they figured out where any mud flows might go and set up some shelters. I did go snowboarding for the very first time that year, and periodically there'd be this waft of sulphurous gas from the from higher up the slope, which I am going to charitably assume was the volcano, and not the cafe. Yeah, and not somebody who had overindulged on the cafe nachos.
Nice.
Fart gags are us.
Indeed, very classy. Anything that you would recommend to experience in Taupo, so we can definitely bid in our application to the New Zealand Tourism Board while we're here?
Oh yeah, funding. Gotta get that funding. Taupo, you've got a great big lake.
Lake-related activities
are
go?
Yeah, lake-related activities are go-go. The whole area of... Because you've got Taupo, you've got various neighbouring, at least from a New Zealand context, towns. The whole area is absolutely rife with tourism, sort of ranging from active to adventure. You know, you can go walking and tramping and all this sort of thing. There are quad bikes. You can rent a quad bike and go zipping through a forest and try not to die, this sort of thing. And from a scenery point of view, it's kind of interesting. I mean, granted, the weather at the moment means that I'm pretty confident I can see the other side of the lake, but I wouldn't want to put a huge amount of money on it. But on a clearer day, you can see right across the lake, and you can see Ruapehu. You can see the snow cap. It's close enough to said mountain that you can drive there for the day and come back. So it's not a bad place to base yourself if you want to do a bunch of stuff in the central North Island, and you're not 100% sure what. They're very tourist-focused here. Was that a reasonable summation?
Yeah, fair enough. They'll find something for you to do. It may involve fish, though.
Fishing? Oh, yep. I mean, the lake empties into the aforementioned Waikato River. There are jet boats that do exciting jet boat things on said river, kayaking and the like. So it's not a bad spot if you want to do outdoorsy stuff. I can also report that it gets bloody chilly at night as winter comes in.
Hmm. Fair enough.
Hmm. I think that was... That's the best summary of Taupo I can really do at the moment. I'm still at the start of the great travelling experience, so I hope to get a bit better at summing up places.
No, that's to be expected.
Yeah, if you want... What you want is some fairly spectacular scenery. Taupo's not a bad start.
Yes, and if you want to do snow-related or have a base for various, dihydrogen monoxide-involved activities, be it crystals or liquid form, and, steam as well, since there are the geothermal area around there.
Indeed.
You're in.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to really hit the ski slopes, then you'd base yourself closer. And there are towns that are better for that in National Park and Ōkuni. But Taupo's, if you've got transport, Taupo's reasonably central for a wide variety of things. And my God, do they have a lot of backpackers and people in motorhomes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You're not really in a place to talk shit about tourists for the next little while, but...
Oh, God, no. It's more you sort of look around and just see how many of the car parks are just a little bit wider so you can fit a motorhome into it, this kind of thing. They've thought about this stuff.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
So that would be our notions for episode 74, Time Sculptors.
I would be genuinely interested. I will be genuinely interested to hear what the audience comes up with for that one. I mean, we went in two fairly different directions as far as what time sculpting is about, but we still both went with a mystery or mystery adjacent type story. Yep. So I'd love to hear what other people come up with for this one.
Indeed. And speaking of mysteries, the prompt for episode 75 is... We call her Amelia, but we don't know why.
Hmm.
All right.
I don't have anything profound to say. I was trying to think of something and it just wasn't happening.
That one was a contribution by Will Myers, so... Should really make sure that I pronounce the scare quotes around Amelia, too.
All right. Okay. Thank you for listening, audience. And we'll be back next time.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time.